Hello there, this is it's me, Brandon, of the Sorry I Offended You podcast. I don't know why, I just think it's fucking hilarious introducing yourself on a podcast where, I don't know, people probably know your fucking name. I even do that in my private programs. I'm like, this is Brandon Marshall Havener with Rebel Flow. And it's like, yeah, they fucking know. I hope they knew my fucking name. I hope they did. That would be quite disturbing if they sent me money and they don't even know my name. And I could just be some swindler. I could just be a program swindler. That goes into the topic that I wanted to start out with. There's this show called The Tinder Swindler on Netflix. And it seems like an interesting show. Not many shows call to me. Again, I like to brag that I'm not a show-watching person. In fact, I have pretty much boycotted Netflix. But The Tinder Swindler may be something worth watching. Maybe not. Maybe it's not worth breaking a Netflix fast for. However, I've had some thoughts. It's interesting. So basically, without any spoilers, because I didn't fucking see the show, so unless you're one of those old school people that don't even want to be spoiled by the trailer. Like, the trailer just says too much. But I recently watched a trailer, and it's about this silver-tongued devil of a man. He basically got dates with women on Tinder, and I think it was, like, around the world. And basically how they describe it is, I don't know. He like sweet talks her and then says, "Hey, you want to go to this 5-star hotel? I got all this money and you're the only one for me and you're special. And when I look into your eyes, it makes me feel warm and gooey inside." He says some shit like that. And then they have sex. And then afterwards, his whole thing is once there, he builds that connection with women. He's like, "Hey, the mafia is trying to fucking kill me. I need you to wire me $20,000 on Venmo." Now, I have many questions to this strategy. I have questions if he's just love bombing these women on the first date. And that's a red flag in itself. So all the single women listening to this podcast, hopefully I can guide you into not being Tinder swindled. For one thing, you know, always have an excuse. You always have to have a money excuse for when someone asks to borrow money. You, just like what Kevin Hart said in his stand-up from a long time ago, you just got to say, like, "I have a savings account and a checking account, and the thing is, I can't give you money because I got this amount in my savings account." Like, you just got to bullshit the guy. Never even think of sending a guy $20,000 after, like, a night in a 5-star hotel. Do not get mesmerized by the 5-star hotel or the love bombing. You gotta keep your head on the swivel. I don't know. Like, just don't find out who the Tinder swindler is and avoid him at all cost. But I just, I'm thinking of this show, and so many times I've watched a show where they sneak in propaganda. So I swear to God, if I decide to watch this show, I'm going to flip my shit. If on episode 3 I'm watching it and they're talking about all the horrible things and the sweet nothings he whispered into their ears, and they're all together around, you know, in a conference room talking about how bad the Tinder swindler is, and they're sharing their experiences, and I'm going to be so upset if one woman says, "And you know what the worst part of all about this whole thing? Later I found out he was unvaccinated. He could have gave me COVID." And then they forget, they're not even focused on the $20,000. They're focused on the fact that he was unvaccinated and it was unacceptable. Or if someone utters, like, "And he stole $20,000 from you during a pandemic?" God. I fucking laugh my ass off whenever I see that online. It's like when someone's pissed off about something online, like let's say, let's just go with the swindling vibe. Like they're talking about some coach scammer that promised to give four trainings in their program, but they only gave them three and then disappeared. And then someone comments on the post and said, they stole one masterclass from you during a pandemic? And it's like, it's 2022. It's like, are we still saying that? Last time I saw someone say that in the comment section, at first I thought she was trolling. I thought she was joking. And then I read the context clues and I'm like, oh fuck, she's serious. Like people still say this shit. Anyway, that's my thoughts. That's my preview of the Tinder Swindler, a show that I may or may not watch. Let's hope for no propaganda. You know, the propaganda is sneaky too. Like I talked about, no spoilers, but a few episodes ago I talked about Dexter, and fucking it took me till the end of like putting the pieces together and just realizing like, damn it, they snuck in some woke shit in here. Damn it. And I didn't even know at first. I was just enjoying the story of a serial killer. And then after the fact of being disappointed at the end, I'm like, they snuck some woke shit in here. I knew it. Speaking of Dexter, he's on the channel of the channel. He's on the program Showtime or whatever, the streaming service you would call it. Showtime is streaming service now too. I guess you can get it on Hulu or something. But he's on Showtime. And speaking of Showtime, There's this show coming out called It's Gonna Be All White. And it's all about how white people are horrible. And it's over the top. It's just over the fucking top. And so, most people can't see the ratio on YouTube, but I can. Because I know people in small places. And no, I got a Google plugin, and you can actually see the dislikes with the Google plugin. So I looked at the ratio of this YouTube trailer, and the shit has, last time I looked, it had like 800 likes and 20,000 dislikes. Like that's an insane ratio. And I think the reason is, I think overall people are tired of a lot of the woke BS. Like, of course you're going to have, sometimes you'll feel like outnumbered with cancel culture and things of that. But you got to understand that it's not a moderate way of thinking. It's very radicalized. So for the untrained human eye or the trained human eye, like if you're just a regular guy going along the business, let's say you're just this regular vending machine operator and, you know, that's your thing. You like to operate vending machines. This has nothing to fucking do with the story. But then you see some crazy shit like that on the internet, you're just going to be, you're going to be alarmed. No matter what race you are, you're going to be alarmed by the radical behavior. So I think sometimes in these online smaller niches of spaces, like personal development, when people are so militant of taking other people down, sometimes we think that's what the world is like. And then you walk outside of your house and people are normal. Caveat, probably, you know, I'm in Maryland. So if I lived in Portland, it probably couldn't say that. Or maybe parts of LA and things of that nature. So I don't know what to tell you. You'll have to watch a trailer after listening to this podcast, or if you're a good multitasker. But don't leave the podcast. Don't leave the podcast for this trailer. Save it. I'm not going to play it in here because my podcast is strictly audio. I'm not one of the cool people that show video footage. And the reason why I don't show video footage of my podcast is because part of the freedom of recording a podcast is not being seen. You can just like, you can like take your mind off the aspect of being seen. Like, you know, I do videos and lives, but it's a whole different thing. In podcasts, I get to be more chill and I don't got to worry about like, you know, managing my looks. Not that I like manage my look, whatever, fuck it. So anyway, one of the reasons why I come to you today on this podcast, and I was inspired and I was pulled to record. Not, I mean, let's be honest, I was laughing at the ideas that were coming up for that Tinder Swindler show. I thought it was fucking hilarious if, like, you know, he stole $20,000 and her friend is like, he did that during a pandemic? But no, the episode, what this episode will be called, because I have not titled the episode yet because I'm recording it right now, but the episode will be called, If You're Not Abusing Yourself, You're a White Supremacist. And so where do I want to go with this? Something that, I mean, it kind of goes into that fucking Netflix thing. It's like, the trailer is basically, the stereotype of everything I have to rant about on this podcast. And it's the fact that there's no in between. Either you have to be a self-loathing white person, or you have to be a self-loathing white person that beats yourself up all the time, or you're an asshole and you're a lost cause. And I think I was pushed to this to the category of a lost cause in a lot of people's minds, at least in the ways of leftism. But yeah, like, but even if you're self-loathing, you're still a racist. You're still a horrible white person. Except you're kind of okay because you're an ally. But you're still a horrible person. And you still have to remind yourself how horrible you are every day. If you know, it's a double-edged sword. And you're never done the work. And you're called to unpack your privilege every single day. However you define unpacking your privilege. And oftentimes, even if you unpack your privilege, it's not enough. And if you say publicly that you're unpacking your privilege, then you're giving yourself cookies and you're patting yourself on the back. And that makes you a fucking horrible person as well. So it's a really tough, it's tough. Like it's either you just take your sovereignty back and realize there's reasonable people of all races out there in the world outside of the cult, or you decide to submit to the cult and prove to the world that you hate yourself every day in order to stay accepted in the cult. And that's how it goes. How does this tie in? Because I really wanted to talk about apologizing, some of the Joe Rogan stuff. This, obviously, I'm kind of like breaking free from the censorship series. I wanted to keep it to two episodes. But this, the Joe Rogan thing, one thing I wanted to say about it that was, you know, like, I just wanted to get a few things off my chest and use this as guidance for people who are, you know, whoever find themselves in the crosshairs of cancel culture. And I want to bring up first the Rock tweet. Okay, so everyone gets in trouble. everyone gets in trouble. There's more stuff coming up now. Basically, I want this episode to be helpful for you if you ever fear of getting in the crosshairs of cancel culture, how to deal with it, how to preserve yourself, things of that nature. You know, and there's really two options, right? Your one option is to not bow down and be free as you are. And then your second option is to apologize, beg for forgiveness, never really be fully forgiven, and then walk on eggshells for the rest of your life and have people messaging you as if they are shareholders of your message. If they're as if they're shareholders of your content. What I mean by that is if you decide to bow down, like if you get caught out and then you decide to go the route of apologizing, then bowing down to the woke ideology, what you will notice is people will start checking in on you and policing you because that's part of the ideology. Part of the ideology is to make sure that other people aren't being complicit in the cause. So that really shows as insane behavior. And one thing that I've noticed that happened to Rebecca, but not me so much, is that whenever there's something going on that people are supposed to be outraged about and the media is painting a target on somebody or something and saying, you must be angry about this thing. Oftentimes, I see people pressure other people into talking about something. It's like this demand that if you have a platform, you need to be using this platform to be saying, talking about the thing that I think is most important right now. So you may find them comment on a post that has nothing to do with shit. And, you know, one thing I was thinking of was like, you make a post, you post a picture of your dog, and then someone comments on your post and they're like, you're posting a dog? It's like the same mentality during a pandemic. You posted a picture of your dog during a pandemic? There are people suffering right now, and you think you're just gonna post a picture of your dog? You know, something like that. And it's like, it has nothing to do with it. Or it's like, hey, checking in, I see you posting pictures of your dog. Wondered if you were ever gonna get around to talking about racism. And it's like, what? Like, this is not how we should go about things. This isn't going to work. It's not, you're turning, this type of behavior pressures and bullies people who have struggles with boundaries into speaking about complex topics that they don't fully grasp. So that's why you have a lot of people sounding stupid as shit. They're not stupid. You know, I don't like calling people stupid because I think we're all like special stars in the sky, unique stars, and we all have our unique talents. The thing is like what Albert Einstein said, if you try to tell a fish how to fly, or you know that quote, you know the thing. If you try to teach a fish how to fly, you know, the fish is going to have trouble. I paraphrase that. But my point is, it's like if you demand everyone to be an activist, some people are meant to speak up about things. Other people are meant to help serve the world in different ways. But the thing is when it's this culture of shaming people for hiding or shaming people that doing things behind the scenes is just an excuse and that you must be militant and you're not allowed to just help people in the, you know, you're not allowed, if you're a baker, you're not allowed to just bake fucking cupcakes and for all races and all genders and all people. Like, you can't just stop at making cupcakes, even if it brings a smile on people's faces. Even if there's a sad person who feels like, you know, my bright side of my day is buying the cupcake from your bakery, it puts a smile on my face. It's not enough. As a baker, you need to have a social media and you need to be talking about, you know, forcing people into reading Robin DiAngelo. It's just, it's just wild. You know, it's like, it's the wildest. I was raised Catholic and I wasn't a fan of my Catholic upbringing, to say the least. I was definitely a class clown. There were some comments made by teachers that rubbed me the wrong way. Like in second grade during somewhere around the time of communion, but I don't think it had anything to do with communion. I just remember the time. He told me that I would go to hell. Mind you, I'm a 7-year-old kid. He told me I'd go to hell if I didn't show up to church every single week. And people are definitely going to hell if they only go to church during Christmas and Easter. And that's when I realized where my 7-year-old brain grasped the fact that I am learning from psychopaths. And maybe I didn't know how to word it perfectly at that time, but I realized that something was fucking off about this religious teaching, and I rebelled ever since. I rebelled by being a class clown. I'm still confirmed. I'm still an official Catholic. But I rebelled the entire way. I caused trouble the entire way. The religious people during the confirmation training, I would manage to sort of own the room in a way where I'd have all the kids laughing at the crazy shit I had to say. You know, I just raised my hand to like give them another one-liner about joking about whatever topic they were teaching us at that time. And I'm pretty sure the parents, the volunteer parents and whoever was teaching us probably wanted to fucking kill me, but had to come to terms that it wasn't being a good Christian to kill me, but they were still probably having thoughts of murder. So that was fun. My point is I felt that my Catholic experience was a bit, you know, cultish. But then I see wokeness and see that ideology. I'm like, this is just a lot. This is even crazier. This is even fucking crazier. And I think sometimes people are either or between Catholicism and wokeism. And I'm like, both of these things are, I've been deep into both of these ideologies, and they're both fucking crazy. But wokeness, maybe it's because wokeness is fresh and it's what I'm dealing with right now. But it feels 100 times crazier than Catholicism. Sometimes I think to myself, am I going to spend the rest of my time on this planet just dunking on woke ideology and resisting, just preserving and protecting my children from being brought into the radical colleges and dyeing their hair blue and shouting at random strangers and demanding that they stand up when they're sitting at a restaurant just trying to eat their fucking pancakes. That's going to be my whole life's purpose in this part of my life, is to teach my children great values and teach them, you know, let them know that they're loved and they don't need to verge to the dark side and become raging communist. So it's going to be quite a task, but I'm made for this. I can do this. I know a lot of stuff. I haven't read any parenting books, but the last book I read had some good knowledge around parenting. It was a book from Brett Weinstein and his wife, Heather. I don't know how to say her last name right now, but you know them, the Dark Horse podcast. And if you don't know, you can check them out. So anyway, that was my thoughts. Let's get back into the apology, you know, some real life things going on or what did go on. My reasons, you know, my stance with Joe Rogan, obviously, you kind of know my stance with Joe Rogan, but I want to explain things. So first, when we last visited this, The Rock and Joe Rogan were cool. Okay, The Rock awkwardly changes tune. So I'm not going to even read the whole thing. You can find it. I'm just going to say basically what happened. You might have already seen what happened. So this author, dude. This author dude calls out The Rock, a white guy, mind you, calls out The Rock for his support in Joe Rogan. And then The Rock responds to this author guy. And he's probably a big name guy. I don't fucking know who he is, though. The Rock responds to this author guy and apologizes to him and said, "I'm educating myself and I'm learning more about the situation." And all I could think is, why in the fuck is... Because recently, the latest hit piece on Joe Rogan was Joe Rogan saying the N-word, right? So it was all about race. Why in the actual fuck am I looking on Twitter and there's a black man apologizing to a white man about this topic? That doesn't fucking make sense. So, you know, I get why Joe Rogan apologized. I get why The Rock apologized. And that's because there's money on the line. With Joe Rogan, I think genuinely, like, when you're in that situation, obviously you don't want people to look at you in a different light, and you don't want people's perception of you to get warped. And it's a horrible experience when your heart is in a good place, but then you're labeled a racist, and you know in your heart that you don't want to be that person. And actually, you know, Joe Rogan to me comes off as a very thoughtful, heart-centered person. And no doubt, like, he said some shit in the past and they took some things out of context. And do I act in that same behavior? No, like, I always felt like that word was off limits for me. But, and plus, I, you know, it just doesn't feel right saying it, whether it's the A or the ER. Like, the ER sounds racist and the A part sounds cringy. Like, you know, like, it's like when you see a white guy saying it with an A at the end, you know they're not really being racist or wanting to be racist. It's like a word of endearment to their friends or whatever, or they're singing along to a fucking song. But it's cringy to hear. It's just fucking cringe. But anyway, my thing is with the context that even though, you know, I hold myself to a certain standard around that, I'm more concerned with where someone's heart is at, right? So the whole apology thing, while I think in a normal world, Joe Rogan's response was authentic and it was grounded, and you know, any regular human being could listen to that and be like, hey, this is a genuine dude. Cool. And I think it was a cool thing that you were willing to look at your flaws and even take ownership for something that, you know, you did 10 years ago. And a word that you said that you weren't going to use anymore, after, you know, 2 years or a few years ago, whatever he said. Any average human being can be like, hey, you know, he owned his shit and he seems like he's coming from a genuine place. Cool. Now, the reason why I'm opposed to publicly apologizing in situations like this is because it's not a call for actual apology. People online, if someone online is purposely cutting up clips and trying to make you look bad, and if people are sharing it, they've already made their mind. You know, it's not, if you're a content creator and a group of people are upset about you for something that you said, they've already made their mind that you're a bad person and they just want to prove more and more that you're a bad person. So really, when they're demanding an apology, they're demanding an admission to guilt and they're demanding you to get on your knees and obey them and for them to be in control of you. Which is why I say that one route that you can go is in full apology mode and obey them and say, hey, I'm going to, you know, let me know how I can be a better person. And then you allow them to send you resources and things like that. And you probably genuinely want to read these things because obviously if hundreds of people are coming against you online, it must mean that you're the horrible person and you're the one in the wrong, because you're just getting like, you know, it warps your reality. If everyone around you is buying into the ideology and all saying that you're wrong, then obviously if you're a heart-centered person, you're like, yeah, you know what? I'm gonna start reading these books and learning this ideology, things of that nature. And when I say ideology, it's really a fucking ideology. There's rules of this shit. It's a fucking cult. Very strict, rigid rules. And sometimes the rules change, so you get yourself in trouble anyway. It changes overnight. Like, no, that's not how you say it. You say it this way now. And then all of a sudden you're getting canceled again. But my thing is, the reason why you don't apologize in that situation is so you don't end up in that situation where people are operating in your sphere as if they're shareholders. And what I mean by that is every time you make a post or you say something a little bit off, or, you know, people feel entitled to jump in your DMs and say, hey, have you been educating yourself about anti-racist work? Hey, have you been educating yourself about how much of a piece of shit you are? Hey, did you read the article I sent you? Okay, prove to me that you read the article. Like, just shit like that. Or, hey, this person is doing some shit online. We're all canceling him. Come along with us. Get your pitchfork. And then you don't, follow them and say something on that public status, then they'll be like, why are you being neutral? Why are you being complicit? Are you on their side? What the fuck? You didn't say anything? I've seen this live in person. Like, I've been knee deep into seeing this stuff. There was this guy who has long got upset. He's been upset about something that I did or something I said. I took the line too far and he got mad and blocked, or he, I don't know. Like, it was the whole thing. Anyway, he had a group, and I think he's a they them now, but anyway, we'll say it was him back then. You're gonna find a way to cancel me for saying, because it's like, I think it's a cancelable offense to referring to him as a him, but I don't fucking know him. Whatever. He had a group of women, a private Facebook chat of women that he was basically pulling authority over, a group of white women. And he would go off on people in that group if they didn't cancel the person that they were calling to cancel at that time. It was wild. It was fucking crazy shit. Like, he would just tag all his friends in the comment section of someone that they decided to cancel that day. And all the women in that group were required to show up and type a comment of their disapproval, or you know, like showing that, you know, policing the education and showing that they were on the right side of history and all that stuff. So, you know, women would show up. They did that shit to me. And, you know, the one woman was like, you need to educate yourself and you need to read this article. And I was like, no, the fuck I don't. That was it. Like, and she was upset and blocked me. It's like, no, the fuck I don't. But it's shit like that, man. And, you know, it was like an emotionally abusive container, which is ironic because they claim to be the most righteous people and on the, you know, the good guys and safe spaces and shit like that. You manage to create this extremely emotionally abusive Facebook chat for women where their reputation was on the line if you didn't do exactly what they said. And that's where it leads to if you try to fawn your way out of cancel culture and you just try to do whatever they tell you to do. It leads to a darker place. Like, you're actually better off if you tell people to go fuck themselves and they get upset at you. So that's why number one mistake is an apology. I didn't agree with Joe Rogan apologizing necessarily. And I kind of see where he was coming from because genuinely, you know, but it's like, talk to your friends, you know? Your friends aren't going to need you to publicly apologize. And that's where it goes into my second point of this particular segment, is that the conversation that The Rock had where he withdrew his support. And actually, I'm going to see if I can see it. Okay, so a lot of people were... Okay, here it is. Don Winslow. So a lot of people were kind of pressuring him, and Don Winslow, one of them. And Don Winslow has been making a campaign, basically getting upset at Joe Rogan and whining about him and stuff like that. Don Winslow says, "Dear at The Rock, you're a hero to many people, and using your platform to defend Joe Rogan, a guy that used and laughed about using the N-word dozens of times, is a terrible use of your power. Have you actually listened to this man's many racist statements about black people?" Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, responds, "Dear Don Winslow." I don't know why they're writing in like dear, like they're writing emails to each other on Twitter. "Dear Don Winslow, thank you so much for this. I hear you as well as everyone here 100%. I was not aware of his N-word use prior to my comments, but now I've become educated to his complete narrative. Learning moment for me. Mahalo, brother, and have a great and productive weekend." And it's just like doing that. You literally threw a friend under the bus on a public forum. And I guess it was preservation. Maybe there were sponsorships involved. Maybe if he pissed off Don Winslow or some of the people tweeting at The Rock, you know, maybe it would have just been an opportunity cost for on The Rock's side. But to me, at least in my values, and I just, you know, I think what makes a real motherfucker is that you don't bow down to this public drama. You know, if I'm cool with the Rogan, I'm just trying to pitch Rogan here on this podcast and be like, you know what? I wouldn't have done that like The Rock. You can have me on your podcast. No, if someone did that, if my friend was in heat, like if my friend was under heat like that and they tweeted me with that shit where it's like, "Dear Brandon, I don't think you're aware of all these videos that this and that person did, blah, blah, blah." I'd be like, "Fuck off, Don Winslow." I publicly tell him to fuck off. What is this? Like, where has loyalty gone? Loyalty to friendship and not in the cultish way, right? That has been my gripe, you know, with my personal experience. And this is something I'm going to save for the next podcast. But in my personal experience, you know, going deeper into it. And my personal experience is when I had a mild form of wokeness within my content and how I, you know, what I addressed and spoke about and things of that nature, which I was doing from the heart, by the way, even though I was accused of being a grifter. Like, why the fuck would I grift for woke? At that time in 2017, why the fuck would I spend all this time talking about the things that essentially what the media wanted me to talk about, if we're being honest? Why would I spend day by day causing that much drama as a grift? That's the dumbest fucking thing. Like, I remember back then I was telling myself, like, man, I feel like I'm always getting into shit, or like I'm always... it's kind of like diverging from my message and things of that nature. Like, it felt like a sacrifice I was making, you know, just to be a real fucking person. Cause that's how I operate in life, really. When I feel like there's a void, when I feel like it's the unpopular thing to say, when I feel like it's a thing that people are being afraid of talking about, that's what draws me to talking about something. So that's when, you know, whenever I'm like ranting on a topic and things of that nature, you know, there's, it's, it comes from wanting to stand up for the underdog. It comes from wanting to speak up about something that's going to piss people off because it needs to be said and it's being openly ignored. That's why I talk about the stuff I do today. But it's never about like, my mind doesn't work like that. My mind doesn't work like, what can I talk about right now where it'll help me make more money? You know, it's just like, no, I believe that money follows authenticity. And maybe there's times in your life where you can verge off of your authentic code and do some sort of grifting. But I believe that it always catches up to you. And I believe that it's not as strong and potent as a message. And long term, you're always better off staying true to your heart. My point is, you know, it's just such a weak thing, not only to publicly apologize to people you don't know, but to throw a friend under the bus in a public setting. You know, to preserve yourself. Because if it doesn't have anything to do with you, the only, you know, you don't have to get involved, but, you know, if you're not involved, don't throw your friends under the bus. Like, just tell people, hey, fuck off. Who are you to, like, constantly harass me? And I just, it's just like wokeness imploded on itself so much that now we're making it acceptable for white men to tell black men to get back in their place and to apologize. Like, that's what it's accepting. And I will never align myself to some bullshit like that. Huh. Anything else I want to talk about apologizing? Don't do it. You're better off being unapologetic. And something that I want to wrap this up with and say is that when you're under the heat, you're being watched by many people. And sometimes it may feel like the world is against you, but really there's so many people, they may be supporting you or they may be watching silently. And there's many times where I've seen with myself and Rebecca when we were under the crosshairs of some crazy shit going on, that a client later telling one of us that the reason that they hired us is because they saw that happen and they were like concerned with, you know, what if that happened to them? Because the thing is people watching, just like I said, did I say like the untrained eye or like the regular person watches this and they think that the woke mob are a bunch of fucking psychos. It's not good optics. It looks horrible. And in fact, afterwards, it looks more horrible in your comment section of what people are saying to you than the actual thing that they're accusing you of. So when you allow yourself to stay grounded and you allow yourself to just be chill about it and just handle it, and you don't flutter and you don't abandon your values and you don't rush to an apology and you don't throw friends under the bus and things of that nature, then you're going to come out the other side even stronger, more knowledgeable. And you're going to attract a lot of people who love you unconditionally and aren't going to flip the fuck out on you if you have a quote wrong opinion, or if somebody has said something about you. Like, you don't want people around you that, you know, somebody spreads a rumor about you and then they believe that rumor. It's like, why were you talking about rumors about me in the first place? And yeah, that's something big that I noticed is with my experience, when my client base was coming in, when I was speaking a mild woke message, and among other things I want to address on the next episode as well, when I was doing that, I realized how fast friends and clients can turn on you without even sending you a private message, without even asking you questions, or, you know, without even digging deep into that, without even using their past experiences with you that show otherwise, where they saw that you were a good person. They're willing to throw that all out the window to obey the cult. And that's just not the type of energy that any healthy person would want to be around. So, oh yeah. And one last thing as I end this, I was going to talk about, obviously, my stance with Joe Rogan. And, you know, when these things happen, I see a lot of accusations get thrown around. And people are basically projecting what people's intentions are. For instance, if you defend Joe Rogan, then you must really think highly about people being able to use the N-word. And that has nothing to do with it. From my perspective, I saw Joe Rogan being a target for quite some time now. And it started with quote-unquote misinformation. And then I see the racist stuff come up. And then I see, you know, like other hit pieces come out and things of that nature. And to me, as a person who's listened to Rogan since 2011, off and on, you know, I haven't been listening to, like, his whole podcast, you know, I haven't been listening to his podcast every single day of the week since 2011 or anything, but, you know, been a fan of his work and things of that nature. And my thoughts about that is, I think it's a shame that in society we react to this behavior of labeling other people bad for supporting something that we deemed as bad that we haven't quite dug into, and we judge based off a fucking headline. And to me, I don't want to hide. If you want to throw all these labels at me of who I am or pretend to know who I am, then I guess more power to you. But if me unapologetically supporting what I support and being me and all that stuff, if that has, you know, at least one person that questions, like, wait, Brandon's a cool dude. And he's never given me the vibe that he's like some fringe white supremacist Nazi supporting person, you know? And so let me dig deeper what he's talking about. What he's saying is fucking triggering me right now. And, you know, I'm having these angry thoughts about Brandon Marshall Havener right now. And how could he say that he's still listening to Joe Rogan after he said those vile things that I saw in that quick video clip? But I've known him. I've been connected with him for 5 or more years now. Maybe there's a reason. And that's kind of what I hope for. And plus, I want to preserve my ability to express myself authentically. I don't want any hooks in me. I don't want to tiptoe around people's perceptions. You know, your perception is yours. You can have that perception. But I'm going to fully support who I want to support. And I guess a reason why it's more unapologetic towards Joe Rogan. And there is that, you know, I saw like one person saying, like, you want to protect someone for saying the N-word so bad and all this stuff. And it's not about that. It's not even fully about Joe Rogan himself. It's that if you truly understand what's going on and what's, you know, the reasoning behind why they're really trying to take Joe Rogan down, you would see the ultimate importance of defending him. Even if you don't agree with everything he said, even if his podcast isn't even your style, I find it important to release that stigma of supporting him to however many people I influence in my sphere of influence. I believe that's important because the deeper reason to taking down Rogan is to censor one more voice that challenges the corporate media and the narrative and the authoritarian rule the government is trying to have over people. And that is way more important than finding clips of him to assassinate his character. And when he does, you know, when he did put out those videos, I genuinely think he came from the heart. And I think that we all fucked up as human beings in the past. I definitely would not want people seeing old conversations I had in high school or as a 20-year-old that didn't know shit before I ever even read a personal development book. Or, you know, even me before going to a spiritual retreat and being more connected to my heart. Sometimes I don't even like people seeing my Facebook post from 3 years ago because, you know, I'm always evolving. And sometimes, like, I'll, like even the mild wokeness phase, like even in 2018, if people saw some posts from that time, I'd fucking cringe. I'd be like, please don't look at that. Please. But this man, he records like these 3-hour podcasts or longer, and they're just recorded to be forever be seen by millions of people. And it's like the people criticizing them, they're only getting like 3 likes on a Facebook post. You know what I mean? And yeah, it's easy to be the critic until you're the one who is the performing on that level. And something that I noticed and learned in my own life that, again, I'm just teasing this next podcast episode. I want to focus that on the topic of the next episode I do, which is called anti-coaching marketing, by the way. So stay tuned for anti-coaching marketing and my thoughts on that. What I realize is there is a very strong connection or very clear connection between cancel culture and self-expression. And if you're the one who's always jumping on the side of cancel culture and judging the fuck out of people that you don't even know, and you're seeing these clips of people and making snap judgments on what their character is and deciding that they should lose their show or they should be censored and things of that nature, or that they deserve to be railed against and bullied and emotionally tormented online, then there's just a lack of vision there, because you don't realize what it's like to be on the other end, to being criticized on a large level, having false claims come your way, having people that you thought were friends immediately start icing you out or unfriending you with no explanation. You know, people you thought highly of, and now you realize that you're a villain to them based off something that may have never happened. Maybe you're accused of something that never happened, or the story is warped. Cancel culture can be this really ugly game of telephone where people start saying things about you and it just starts not becoming true at all. And people believe stories about you of things that you've never said and things that you've never defended or things that you never stood for. You know, it's kind of like someone hearing this podcast and hearing that I still listen to Joe Rogan, and then, you know, they send the message to other people or take a clip out of context in this podcast and say, you know what, Brandon Marshall Havner advocates for people to say the N-word and wants white people to freely say it in society and actually use it in day-to-day life, or, you know, just some ridiculous shit like that. And to be quite honest, I'm just tired of it. And I'm willing to be labeled something so ugly in somebody's mind if it means standing against this really abusive ideology and abusive tactics that are used amongst people. Abusive tactics that lead people to committing suicide at times, and in more frequent cases, maybe feeling lost and alone and unsupported and casted out, and just like, you know, knowing, being in the space where I am and me being caught off guard by cancel culture in the past, and even me knowing to have the strength to be consistent online and things of that nature. And I was never the type of person who said, hey, this is getting rough. I can't handle the heat. I'm going to log off for a year or whatever. Like, I've seen people go to Jesus under pressure, like just totally turn into Jesus people. I've seen people totally take their brand offline over all the chaos. And, you know, for me, like, for me, even being someone who's consistently online and still answered to people and still stood up for myself, it's not like, I know I'm a ginger, but it doesn't mean I don't have a soul. It doesn't mean it doesn't hurt when a client that I just was on an intensive with and connected to and thought was an awesome person and wanted them to win suddenly thinks I'm a racist and fucking blocks me and then cancels the rest of the payments that are owed, even though I am owed that money. You know what I mean? Like shit like that. Or like, you know, friends who you vibed with for years and then all of a sudden they're like, they go ice cold without even a word. Sort of like the online version of the silent treatment or something. It's just like, it's an emotionally rough thing. And I think we need to move on into being more forgiving towards each other, more tolerant of different viewpoints and ideas. You know, knowing that we don't have to have all the exact same opinions, not automatically jumping to the conclusion that someone has extremely ill intentions or they're the horrible person that we judge them to be, and being under the practice of digging deeper. Like if you see a tagline or if you see a video reel of somebody like Joe Rogan, who's being like, things are being thrown out of context or you don't know the fucking context. Like even if you have the belief that, hey, white people should never fucking say that word, which is understandable, knowing the context is still important. Knowing what his intention was is still important. Knowing what he stands for today is still important. And it's not only important for society or that other person who has the crosshairs upon them. It's also important for you. Because when you're judging people so harshly, you're judging yourself. When you're creating a worldview that all these people have such bad intentions and they're the worst of the worst and they're utter trash and scum, that's got to be a dark place to live. I'm simply happier than a lot of people because literally people decide either consciously or subconsciously to believe that they're surrounded by narcissists and racists and all this other shit. And I take a step back and look at context and I realize, wait, there are some bad people in this world that, you know, definitely exist. There's definitely horrible things going on in this world. But I refuse to take on the idea that all of my neighbors are a bunch of self-serving, controlling narcissists and racists and have like skeletons in their closet. And if you live in the ideology of expecting people to be perfect, that's what you're going to get. And that leads into my next episode called the anti-coaching marketing. Because like, you know, in the coaching space, I see the same fucking thing and it's attached to woke ideology in a way. And you notice that people in the woke ideology also go in the anti-coaching industry ideology and all that shit. But you see so many people just completely shit on the coaching industry and think that, you know, get into the mode of thinking that everyone who's a coach has bad intentions because they have such high standards for coaches to not be even human, like just be gods or something. And sometimes coaches bring it on themselves. They call themselves gods and goddesses and shit like that. But they expect them to be immortal and not human. And they put them on pedestals and things of that nature. And I see the same correlation with celebrities or just people in the public. And we're so quick to cast stones when all we are is just human, and maybe it's not as, sensational? Is that the word? Maybe it's not in the sense of, you know, this extreme roller coaster of good and evil. Maybe we're all just fucking humans trying to figure shit out. And yeah, there, you know, that doesn't mean to not have boundaries, and that doesn't mean to be wearing rose-colored glasses and thinking that no one has bad intentions and things of that nature. But life is a more peaceful place to live when you don't accuse nearly everybody who has made a mistake as a Satan-worshipping, racist, Nazi, narcissist, you know, things like that. That's my first rule of happiness. I'm going to write a book called Rules of Happiness. My first rule of happiness is not calling everybody a narcissist, and see how that works for you. Anyway, thank you for listening. If you would like to support this show, please leave me a 5-star review on the iTunes app. I don't think you can give me no stars on the Spotify, and I don't know what the other platforms are like. Share this if you feel called to. And also, I will be having a new program coming out called Fuck Cancel Culture, and this is all relative to that. Stay tuned on my Instagram. I will be announcing it on future podcast episodes as well. But if you go follow me on Instagram at Brandon Marshall Havener, or if you follow me on Facebook, Brandon Marshall Havener, or if you simply go to my website, BrandonMarshallHavener.com, you will be updated on the new mini course I'm releasing called Fuck Cancel Culture, which will help equip you to deal with situations like this. Once again, thank you for listening. I am Brandon Havener, and I am signing out if you forgot my fucking name. Peace.